This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, June 19th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grahatum.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for KUAF comes from Nightbird Books, located on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Nightbird is a locally owned and operated bookseller with a cafe that offers local coffees, baked foods, and brewed beer on tap. An events calendar and more located on the web at nightbirdbooks.com. And KUAF is also supported by Archon Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville. Archon Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. ArchonPrinting.com or 444-7711.
Ahead on the program, we have an update on the Ozark Mountain Solid Waste District's purchase of a regional landfill. Also, the Northwest Arkansas Naturals prepare to host the Texas League All-Star Game, and we begin a three-part series about the Arkansas Research and Technology Park in Fayetteville. Plus, your chance to win tickets to see Old Crow Medicine Show at the Arkansas Music Pavilion Sunday nights.
But first, now that nine death row inmates have challenged Arkansas's new lethal injection law and urged a judge to declare that the Department of Correction can't use a 2013 execution law to put them to death, Governor Mike Beebe has put execution dates on hold. Governor's spokesman, Matt DeCampbell.
We are not going to set execution dates for some time, you know, because of the legal matters that are still involved. And we now have both the statute, our new death penalty statute, being challenged in court, and we're having to reexamine our drug protocol because of issues with the supplier. So even though we have letters from the AG, we're not going to be setting dates anytime in the immediate future.
Due to legal issues and protocol concerns with acquiring a drug, DeCampbell says setting an execution date right now would not be pragmatic. The University of Arkansas is releasing a statement that a major gas line has been severed on campus. It's near the Hillside Auditorium on Dixon Street. The university says it's a potentially very dangerous situation, advising people to stay away from the area. Building evacuations have begun just before noon today for multiple buildings on the south of Dixon Street, west of Harmon, and north of Fairview, and east of Garland. The evacuations will remain in place at least until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Buildings being evacuated include Bruff Commons, Yoakum Hall, Humphreys, Kimple, Walton College, J.B. Hunt, Walker Hall, Reynolds Center, and Mechanical Engineering.
More than half of the attorneys general and 65 members of the Arkansas General Assembly joined together yesterday to ask the Arkansas Supreme Court to uphold a $1.2 billion judgment. The case demands that Johnson & Johnson and subsidiary McNeil Janssen Pharmaceuticals pay the money as penalty for selling Risperdal to state consumers and lying about the safety risks involved. McDaniel says he received overwhelming support.
I have been overwhelmed by the amount of support that Arkansas has been able to garner from my friends around the nation. I have never seen 35 attorneys general ever sign on to a state Supreme Court brief. Even if they were supportive of a sister state, that's just not something they normally do. So this truly is an historic effort.
A jury last year convicted the companies who appealed the verdict. McDaniel says they must be held responsible.
Governor Mike Beebe is calling for a review of the state's parole system after a Little Rock murder suspect was found to have been charged with 10 prior felonies. The governor says the state must determine if the case of suspect Daryl Dennis points to a broader problem in how the state addresses parole violations. Little Rock Mayor Mark Stodola says he believes the current parole monitoring system is broken.
I think it's clear that we've got a system that is not adequately funded. There's not adequate monitoring. I made my point in the State of the City speech that notwithstanding this homicide that ultimately has resulted in a parole revocation, it's a little bit late for that kid, isn't it? A little bit late. And it's a tragedy. It's an absolute tragedy. That homicide probably never would have occurred if this guy had been put back in the penitentiary like he should have been multiple times before.
Dennis is charged with the murder of a Fayetteville teenager, Forrest Abrams. Since his release from prison in 2008, Dennis never had a parole revocation hearing. Officials at the Department of Community Corrections have said Dennis was going through an Act 3 mental health evaluation, which prevents the department from revoking someone's parole.
Around 100 members of the community and medical community gathered yesterday at Mercy Health Northwest in Rogers to dedicate the new Mercy Senior Behavioral Health Program, an 18-bed unit to serve the geriatric population of Northwest Arkansas and Southern Missouri. After a morning prayer led by a member of the ministry office and a Mercy sister, Scott Street, president of Mercy Hospital Northwest, welcomed the crowd with one word.
That's exciting. But we're excited because, as most of you know, we spent months in months going to the communities around Northwest Arkansas, gathering input on what services were needed. And so that's a tradition in Mercy, and that's our focus, is providing services that Northwest Arkansas and this community needs. And that's what we've done here today in bringing a behavioral health unit to Northwest Arkansas. So we're excited about that. So really all I want to do is just say welcome and thank you for being here for our open house of this wonderful unit.
The Senior Behavioral Health Program is made possible by capital raised by Mercy's ministry and by a $1 million donation from the Walmart Foundation. It will treat all mental and behavioral issues of those 55 and older. Dr. John Holden is the program's medical director. He says this program is necessary to address the needs of the rapidly growing and aging population of Northwest Arkansas, citing that Bella Vista is second only to the state of Florida as the most popular retirement area in the U.S., and with retirement comes change.
And think of what those changes mean. We move from one area, one environment that we may have been comfortable with for many years, moving on to something else. They're called adjustments that we have to make. We leave family and friends behind to establish new family, new friends, an adjustment to make. Again, body changes. As we grow older, things don't always work as they did in earlier times. Chronic pain sometimes is a factor as well. Such things as depression, anxiety, adjustment disorders, substance abuse comes to play.
The inpatient program will also address Alzheimer's disease and dementia. Though they will officially open next month, the program plans to admit their first patient on the 24th of this month. You can hear more on Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large.
If you've been near the downtown Fayetteville Square the past few days, you might have noticed some excavation taking place on the parking lot at Center Street and Church Avenue. Allison Jumper is the Parks Planning Superintendent for the City of Fayetteville, and she says the project should add a little more green space to the downtown area.
The project will be removing asphalt from an existing parking lot and replacing it with nutrient-rich soil to grow trees, and then creating a swale in the middle so that it will capture stormwater and help filter it before it goes into the watershed.
Jumper says after construction is complete, the lot won't lose any parking spaces, but it will gain tree canopy to provide shade and help mitigate the heat island effect, which the Environmental Protection Agency describes as developed areas that are hotter than nearby rural areas. Jumper says it was time to plant trees to replace others surrounding the lot.
The trees in that lot have been degrading over the years because they don't have proper soil to grow in, and there was a grant available from the Arkansas Urban Forestry Commission, so we applied for the grant.
Total cost of the project, nearly $21,000, $7,500 of which came from the matching grant, and the rest came from materials and in-kind labor from the city's Parks and Transportation departments.
In other Fayetteville news, the City Council last night left on second reading the proposed door-to-door solicitation ordinance. The measure would place restrictions on when solicitors are allowed to go door-to-door, prohibit them from soliciting at homes posted with no soliciting signs, and require most people seeking to go door-to-door to submit to a background check and permitting process. The ordinance was amended to extend the allowed solicitation time to 9 p.m., to add a 5-year limit on the annual background check for solicitors who are in good standing, and to allow sample newspapers to be left at residents' homes. Aldermen also requested more time to consider the impact the ordinance would have on the city staff before the issue is again considered at the next council meeting on July 2nd.
Springdale residents should be advised later this week Emma Avenue will be closed at the railroad tracks. Closure will take place between 7 a.m. Saturday and 7 p.m. Sunday. According to a release by the Springdale Police Department, the closure is necessary so that the Arkansas and Missouri Railroad can add a second set of tracks, traffic and pedestrian crossing arms, and make other improvements to the existing track. Barricades will be in place to detour traffic onto Commercial and Hewitt Streets.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals have now won 4 in a row. After defeating the Arkansas Travelers 5-2 on Monday, the Nats shut out the Travs last night 4-0. The Naturals are now 26-45 on the season. The series against the Travelers concludes tonight in Little Rock.
Partly cloudy tonight. Lows will be in the mid-60s in Northwest Arkansas. Upper 60s for the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly sunny tomorrow. Slight chance of afternoon showers. Warm tomorrow, highs from 87 to 92. And for Thursday night, a few clouds, lows around 70. Last winter, we reported on the failure of an ambitious solid waste project, a regional landfill purchased in 2006 by Ozark Mountain Solid Waste District, which was comprised of Baxter, Boone, Marion, Newton, Carroll, and Searcy counties, all in north central Arkansas. District members anticipated that tipping and hauling contracts would eventually help pay off the purchase note, in this case revenue bonds, yielding a lucrative landfill venture. Instead, business collapsed and the district voted to default. In April, the bondholder's lawyer issued a letter calling in the entire loan package, valued at $12.3 million. Ozark's at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this status report.
It really seemed like a good idea. Rather than haul trash collected from the six-county Ozark Mountain Solid Waste District out of the region, why not purchase a local landfill up for sale and use municipal and rural waste contracts income to pay off the note over 15 years? Plus, the district sought to retain this site from the vagaries of some future private enterprise. Turns out the 700-acre Neighbors Landfill, located in northern Baxter County on the Norfolk Lake watershed, a sensitive karst region, required a lot of fixing up. Fresh cells needed to be excavated and lined with leachate capture systems installed. Overfilled trash pits required mitigation and capping, and a new methane collection system built, all according to new stricter environmental regulation. Initially, Northwest Arkansas Economic Development Commission, based in Harrison, coordinated the project. But as site engineering and construction costs escalated out of control, NAEDC staff were terminated and replaced by a site manager. As a consequence, the district was forced to raise tipping and hauling fees to meet the debt payment. And one by one, waste haulers and even district members terminated their contract with the landfill, dooming the project to failure. Last October, the Solid Waste District Board voted to default on the debt, more than $12.3 million. Money secured via revenue bonds, municipal bonds at finance income-producing projects. It was the first default of its kind in the state. The landfill and hauling company, which serviced a reported 14,000 customers, were shut down. District cities and towns now haul waste as far away as Oklahoma. In a last-ditch effort to salvage the project, the district board in December asked Cruz & Associates Investment Banking in Little Rock, the original revenue bond broker, along with the bond trustee, Bank of the Ozarks, and trustee council, to secure outside management or quick sale of Neighbors Landfill. No dice. By April, an attorney for the investors issued a letter to the district demanding the loan be paid in full. But the district is flat broke. None of the district members will talk on record about the situation, except Harrison Mayor Jeff Crockett. He knew nothing about the trash business when he was elected mayor, but he does now. He serves as chair of the Ozark Mountain Regional Solid Waste District Board.
Yes, myself and Bob Wright with Cruz & Associates and some people from the bond trustees have been diligently looking for some to get somebody interested in operating the landfill to where we can permanently put the permanent cover on the cells that are already there, which has never been done, and stop some of the leachate flow, and then also open up new cells and hopefully generate enough revenue to make this thing work.
Mayor Crockett was not around when the district landfill project was negotiated and still questions why such an expensive bond project was even struck, given the 20-year-old dump was appraised at less than $4.3 million. On June 11th, the board met with revenue bond underwriter Cruz & Associates and voted to cooperate with investors on trying to locate a potential management firm to get it up and running.
The only person we have had that has been interested has been Inland Services.
Inland Services, an Oklahoma corporation based in Texas, is a contract management company specializing in solid waste services and landfill operations for governments, municipalities, and the military. It currently operates in 9 states. In Arkansas, it has contracts with Rogers and Harrison, which is how Mayor Crockett connected with the firm.
They had looked at purchasing Neighbors back last spring when we decided we were going to try to sell it and advertise it for sale. At that point in time, Waste Management and I think Republic, Allied, Inland, several of them went out and did some feasibility studies and looked at the possibility of buying it. We got no bids on purchasing it. Nobody wants to take the existing environmental challenges that are out there and assume that liability. which is what we did when we bought the landfill from RLH, which in my estimation, as I've stated many times before, was a mistake, but it's water over the dam and we can't go backwards. But anyway, they have put in an estimate, and we're involved in discussions, and we'll have another discussion with this morning, a conference this morning with them. They have put in estimates of operating the landfill for $1.2 million a year.
That's what Inland would charge the Solid Waste District to operate Neighbor's Landfill, which, if reopened, would need to charge $30 per ton tipping fee. The last year it was in operations, Neighbors handled 70,000 tons, and once back online, that could generate $2.1 million per year, providing the district cash flow of $900,000, which, Harrison Mayor Crockett said, would be used to pay down the debt. But in order to reopen, the district will have to take on even more debt.
To do this, it's going to take about a $4 to $5 million investment in order to bring this up to snuff and get the landfill to EDA or ADEQ guidelines to cap the existing cells with permanent cover, which will stop a lot of the leachate that's going through, create new cell to start taking new trash.
To ensure enough trash is brought to the landfill, the idea was brought to the table by investors, including bond trustee Bank of the Ozarks.
Taking the property back is not an option to them. They don't want it back with the environmental problems. So, you know, most foreclosures, if they foreclose on your home, they take it back. If they foreclose on this, what do they got? They got a landfill with millions of dollars worth of environmental problems.
The district would have to enact ordinances at the county and city level to ensure trash flow control, Mayor Crockett said.
If we could get 135,000 tons to that landfill, it would generate almost $3 million a year cash flow to repay debt.
The cost to customers won't go up once new contracts are struck, he said. But if the deal ends up in the dustbin?
We are looking at a $12 million debt that the district is saddled with, that who knows how the courts will decide that needs to be repaid. And we are also looking at $5 million worth of closure costs.
The shuttered landfill continues to produce leachate, toxic wastewater, which has to be collected, documented, and hauled away for treatment. According to state environmental records, 2 million gallons of leachate were collected and transported in just 1 year, hauled to nearby sewage treatment facilities for processing. So if all attempts fail to salvage the landfill, who is financially liable? Late last year, the Solid Waste District Board was reportedly told it would be, but Harrison Mayor Jeff Crockett says the pain will be spread much farther than that.
It's going to be a burden on the back of every individual that lives in this six-county district.
If you call the neighbor's office, a cheery voice says, it's closed now. But leave a message if you want your trash receptacles picked up. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Last Friday afternoon, a handful of founding sponsors and Kansas City Royals alumni were participating in an exhibition game at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. June 25th, the stadium will welcome a number of other guests when Arvest Ballpark becomes the site of the 77th annual Texas League All-Star Game. Justin Cole, general manager for the Northwest Arkansas Naturals, says he is looking forward to finally hosting the event.
The luxury of being in the Texas League, there's only eight teams, so you're kind of in an eight-year rotation. And it's worked out to where basically the home city really treats it like a home game. So you have your normal expenses that go into a day of game. You are responsible for some of the extras that we do, the gala and things like that, making sure we put on a good event. But really, it's just in a rotation. So you get it essentially every 8 years. Things can intervene if a new ballpark opens or there's a special anniversary or X, Y, and Z. We have swapped the games before. We were actually supposed to have it in 2010, but that was the 75th anniversary of the Texas League, which was founded in San Antonio. So San Antonio took it that season, and that pushed us to 2013. So we're excited to finally have it. It's going to be great.
While the league does not have an official All-Star break, Cole says the Nats are on the road this week, so that does give organizers time to finish preparing for events and festivities tied to the All-Star game. While Cole expects next week to be exhausting, he says it will be rewarding. Four Naturals players have been selected to represent the host team at Tuesday's All-Star Game, which will pit players from North Division teams against players from South Division teams. Cole says most of the front office workers and players from the various teams will arrive in town June 24th, and festivities will begin that night with a gala at Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Stadium in Fayetteville.
Proceeds are benefiting the Children's Hospital. We're doing a silent auction, and the keynote speaker is Willie Wilson, who is a Royals Hall of Famer, tremendous ball player in the 70s, 80s, early 90s. We're very excited to have him. He came down for one of our Royals Caravan events 3 years ago and was just phenomenal. Very personable, you know, a guy that tells great stories, and we're really excited that he'll be at that. So the event kind of really, it's an auction, a chance to mingle with different folks. The Children's Hospital will do a very brief presentation. Mr. Glass, the owner of the Royals, will be there to do a quick, you know, presentation speech for everybody. And then the keynote is Willie Wilson with our radio broadcaster, Stephen Davis, kind of doing a Q&A for about a half hour, 45 minutes. The other nice little perk of that event is all of the players will be there from the game. So it's an opportunity to meet them. We'll have a brief autograph session. So adds a very intimate way to get to kind of know those guys and ask them why they're here and how well they're doing that you don't normally get.
In addition to attending the gala, players will receive a commemorative gift bag and be able to participate in a variety of pregame activities, including a golf tournament at the Springdale Country Club, a tour of Tyson and the Walmart Visitor Center, as well as a Razorback facility tour. Northwest Arkansas Naturals General Manager Justin Cole says organizers want to make sure participants have a good time, and he adds that the All-Star Game provides an opportunity to show off the area and the ballpark.
For us, it really is, it's the crown jewel of our entire season. I mean, all 70 Naturals games are hugely important, and we take them as seriously as we ever would, but this is it's a unique event that you don't get to do very often. You could go a whole career, potentially, and not be in an All-Star game and be able to host one. So we're pumped just to have the opportunity to do it, but also to have all these different people coming to the ballpark on the same day. Some of them have been here at various times, but to have everyone together for that event is really exciting. And for our fans, there's a ton going on. You know, not only the game, we'll open gates at 3:00 that day. They'll get to come in and watch full batting practice. After each team hits, they'll sign autographs in their respective dugouts. And then we'll transition into the home run derby at 6:00. And that'll last about an hour. Three guys from each team will hit, as well as a high school representative from Spiral, Oklahoma. He won our qualifier, so he'll get to hit in that as well. And then the game will start at about 7:15.
There will be extras for the fans to enjoy as well, including a commemorative ticket, a commemorative cap to the first 2,500 spectators, entertainment by a breakdancing bat boy named Breakin' BB McCoy, and a post-game fireworks display. Cole says fans will also have the opportunity to watch players they may not typically get to see.
I think really one of the best parts about it is we don't play the South Division a whole lot. Corpus and San Antonio come once in the first half, come once in the second half, and we only play them six times in Springdale. Same with the other two teams in the South. This is an opportunity to see the best of all those teams together at one time. So if maybe you miss the Corpus San Antonio series, Corpus has a guy that leads minor league baseball in home runs, George Springer. This is an opportunity to see him, probably he hasn't been announced, probably in the home run derby as well as in the game, and you get to see all these guys at one time. Where, you know, if you come to Naturals games and maybe you're not the biggest fan, maybe you may have missed some of those, you get to see the best of the best on one field in one day. And you know, in any walk of sport, that's a really cool opportunity.
The 77th annual Texas League All-Star Game presented by Castrol will be next Tuesday at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Gates open at 3, the Home Run Derby begins at 6, and it's followed around 7:15 by the All-Star Game. Tickets and more information are available at nwanaturals.com. It is Wednesday, June 19th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now on the phone is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Okay, picture with me, if you will.
Okay.
Grand old days of department stores.
Mm-hmm.
Where when one dressed up to go shopping. And then picture the Boston store in Fort Smith, which opened in 1879.
Hmm.
And lived until 1984.
That's a good long run.
In the old days, when it was on Garrison Avenue, it had a tea room. And ladies went and had little sandwiches and desserts as a pause in their shopping.
Sounds very fancy.
And if you'd like to do this yourself, at noon on Thursday, the Fort Smith Museum of History is presenting a recreation of that tea room, including a fashion show of vintage dresses, suits, coats, furs, hats, and accessories purchased from the Boston store and modeled by Western Arkansas ballet dancers and museum supporters. There will also be little sandwiches.
Excellent.
And baked fudge.
Sounds very good.
Tickets are $20 in support of the museum, and you can make a reservation at 783-7841.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This Week in This American Life, if you're in the country illegally, why show up at a Border Patrol station?
What's your job?
It's enforcing immigration laws. What's it to you?
I'm illegal, too.
Oh, you're illegal?
So you think I should get deported?
I don't know. Why don't you show us some ID?
Why getting arrested was his plan all along. This Week.
This American Life, Saturday morning at 6 and Sunday morning at 10 on KUAF.
And if you ever have any questions about our programming, you can go to KUAF.com and find out more there. You can also go to OzarksAtLarge.com to find out more about the show, including information about the music beds that you hear in between songs.
Absolutely.
For example, earlier in the show, we heard something by Sigur Rós.
Yes.
The new album came out yesterday.
Oh.
I don't know. Did you not know that?
No, I bought it last week.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I bought it in Selfos.
Well, because you were in Iceland.
Right.
It's an Icelandic group. Well,
exactly.
Apparently it came out in the U.S.
Right.
Yesterday.
Thought it had already come out, and I just bought it there.
Nope. Apparently, yeah. People around the world
sure.
Release things earlier. So anyways, for us yes. Here in the States who are not abroad,
right.
Came
right.
Out yesterday, and you can check that out. Coming up later in the show, you'll hear something from Capital Cities, and their album came out earlier this month titled, it's called In a Tidal Wave of Mystery. While I was going through the album trying to find a song that I wanted, I ran across a track called Farrah Fawcett Hair,
mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of collaboration happening. Andre 3000.
From formerly
Outkast.
Mm-hmm.
Shamika Seacrest. And interestingly enough, NPR's Frank Tavares. He's the guy that you hear, support for
right.
NPR comes from, blah, 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 blah.
At least you hear now. I think he may be leaving
he may
NPR.
Be.
Yeah.
He may be, but as for a long time, you've
very
heard him.
Time.
It's a very distinct voice, and so I was very surprised to hear it on the track, so I was very amused. So Farrah Fawcett Hair by Capital Cities might be worth checking out.
Gotcha.
Just for funsies.
Right.
And also we have some local music. Dam Arkansan, their forthcoming EP, Save Yourself, is now available for a first listen, basically, on our website.
Right.
KUAF.com. It's on our blog, the Mixdown. So if you go to KUAF.com on the front page, you can get to it there. We'll have it up for about a week, so you can listen to it before they officially release it. So you don't even have to go to Iceland to hear it ahead of time.
And the CD release is actually Saturday night at Smoke and Barrel in downtown Fayetteville.
Yes. Also, lots of things happening this week, this weekend. I know this is kind of the weekend that we're making up for the freak weather we had at the beginning of May on the weekend
yes.
That had everything. I love that we were concerned that there were too many things happening in that one weekend, and so when things got rescheduled, everybody made sure that those things are still all the things in the same weekend.
Exactly. And you live in the Ozarks when a festival named for spring is held the day after summer begins because of winter weather.
Exactly. Spring Fest in Fayetteville has returned after a year off. It will be this Saturday. It was supposed to be in May, but it's a Saturday, and the regular events will be happening. Plus, they've added a 5K, so that's mm-hmm. That'll be interesting. What else do we have? Friday, if you want something to do Friday before we get to the weekend, comedian Tim Northern is returning to the UARC Bowl. Show starts at 8. Admission is $7. You want something free on Saturday night and you're in Benton County. Grammy Award winner Kenny Loggins is performing a free concert at Orchards Park in Bentonville. It begins at 7:30. It's kind of part of the LPGA Tour, the Northwest Arkansas Championship that's taking place at Pinnacle this
and
week.
That's free and open to the public.
Free and open to the public.
At Orchards Park.
Mm-hmm.
The 23rd Annual Riverfront Blues Festival will be held June 21st and 22nd. That's this weekend at Harry E. Kelly Park, right there on the Arkansas River in Fort Smith. Performing artists include Johnny Winters, Lee and the Mojo Doctors, and more. Shows begin Friday night at 6, Saturday afternoon at 5. Tickets and more information, riverfrontbluesfest.org.
Also this weekend, the Pick and Post presents Slade Cleaves. Thank you. That's Saturday night at the 324 Ballroom in Fayetteville. Concerts at 8, and admission is $20. And one more thing getting rescheduled, Old Crow Medicine Show will be at the Amp Sunday night. All the tickets that you got before will be honored. And later in the show, we will be giving away some more tickets. So if you don't have yours, you might be able to win some free ones.
Brush up on your bad Arkansas geography and movie history. Support for KUAF comes from EurekaSprings.org, a website featuring over 80 bed and breakfasts, historic hotels, lodges, cottages, and cabins, plus information on dozens of restaurants, a Eureka Springs vacation planner, events calendar, and more available on the web at EurekaSprings.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Some technology startup companies, such as the Apples and Hewlett-Packards of the world, have humble beginnings in a garage. Others like Facebook and Google have their roots in college dorms. But there is another way. In the first of a three-part series about the Arkansas Research and Technology Park in Fayetteville, Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis travels to the Genesis Technology Incubator, a facility that is designed to help startups flourish in Northwest Arkansas.
From the outside, this seems like any other day in any other office park. The wind whips flags freely in the breeze. The occasional delivery van delivers packages to one of the many buildings on Research Center Boulevard here in South Fayetteville. But this isn't just any business park. This is the Arkansas Research and Technology Park, a venture undertaken in the early part of the last decade with several partners. Phil Stafford is the executive director of the University of Arkansas Technology Development Foundation, the governing board responsible for everything that goes on at the park. He says that the park's development started with a conceptual analysis.
That conceptual analysis was initiated by then Chancellor John White, who had been approached by then Mayor Dan Coody to see if there was more that the university and the city could do together to inspire more knowledge-based or technology-based job creation in the area.
From there, a strategic plan for the park was formed, and several stakeholders embarked on fleshing out the park with multi-tenant facilities and other resources to help attract fledgling startups to locate at the park. But one facility was already in place when the strategic plan came about. That facility is the Genesis Technology Incubator, which has been in its current location in some form since 1986, although the building did undergo a major expansion that was completed in 1999. The incubator serves a similar function today as it did all those years ago, which is to provide a support system for new technology startups. Again, here's Phil Stafford.
Part of the service offering that we provide here for our corporate partners is a front desk presence for them so that they don't have to invest in a receptionist, if you will, for their office. We provide that service for them. So our receptionist receives their guests or visitors, as the case may be. We receive their mail and distribute it in their mailboxes. We receive their packages and get that distributed to them in a timely way.
The incubator clients have access to other amenities, such as conference centers, computer workstations, and copy services. Besides physical amenities, being located in the Genesis Incubator facility also brings slightly less tangible benefits than if startups set up shop elsewhere. Ron Foster is the CEO of Nanowatt Design.
The two biggest issues really are always access to brain power, and being located here, it's literally just down the street. We can go interface with professors that were the inventors. If we like, and we have in the past, we've formally develop subcontracts with the university so that they have students doing work to help us prove certain things or advance our research.
To tell you what kind of research NanoWatt is doing, a little bit of scientific background is necessary here. Microprocessors, like the ones found in your laptop, smartphone, or most any other electronic device these days, contains countless microcircuits that do the number crunching for the software on the device that the chip operates. NanoWatt is looking into a technology licensed from the U of A called sleep convention logic.
The reason it's called sleep convention logic is every time that you do a calculation using some input data, then the circuit itself is left in a sleep mode where its standby leakage power is very low. And in conventional logic, that's not necessarily true at all. You have to take some pains to design a special circuit that would make a decision when to sleep it, when to wake it. And also that would be very clunky and very slow. So this is kind of naturally built into the whole logic network itself.
The technology is still in the proof of concept stage, but through a research partnership with an unnamed defense contractor, Foster expects to have some solid proof sometime later this summer.
They actually have an integrated circuit that is matched with very rapidly handling data images that are acquired. And so they need a compromise between speed and power consumption. And they have an exact chip that's also a multiprocessor. You know, you see it Best Buy for several years now. You buy a computer that says quad core. It means it actually has four computing processors that are a shared resource that are brought on as needed to accelerate computing.
The design is far from production lines and even further from improving battery life in your next smartphone. And Foster says that the company may never actually build its own designs.
Companies similar to ours have eventually made either licensing deals or buyout deals with large companies to adopt their technology. And I'm aware of at least a couple of companies that all they ever had were computer simulations. They never actually built anything. So in that sense, yes, we're planning to work almost entirely in the computer simulation domain.
While NanoWatt's work may exist almost entirely in the virtual domain, another Genesis Incubator client conducts its research almost entirely in the physical realm. We last heard from Blue and Green nearly 2 years ago. At that time, they were making inroads to commercializing their products designed for sidestream gas injection in different types of water treatment systems, using oxygen, ozone, or carbon dioxide, and called S-DOX, high-dose, and C-DOX respectively for different applications. Using the same technology and delivery system they have already developed, the company has now brought a fourth product to market. Cleet Brewer is the CEO of Blue and Green.
Recently, in the last year, based on listening to our clients and the demand that our regional managers were hearing in the marketplace, we kind of redesigned and improved the S-DOX technology to work in collection systems for raw wastewater treatment for sewers like gravity-fed and forced main lines, anywhere from 4-inch to 30-inch lines that are, you know, all over America.
Brewer says that in the next 10 years, trillions of dollars will need to be spent to rehabilitate aging water and sewer pipes and infrastructure because of corrosion and buildup of hydrogen sulfide in the pipes.
Oxygen turns out to be the best oxidizer that reduces that hydrogen sulfide down to zero or non-detectable levels, which means the pipes are safer, there's no odors, and you get no corrosion and you get a longer life of these pipes. And so our system, the way it works using our patented process with the side stream but also the super saturation tank, allows us to deliver that even in that shallow raw water in a pipe. You don't need depth in order for our technology to work like you do with most aeration systems.
The day that I talked with Brewer, he said that the company's first S-DOX collection system was being turned on in Houston, marking about 1 year between the time product development began and when it actually hit the market. He says that development of all four of Blue and Green's products was made much easier with the resources of the research park available, specifically the retention pond that has become the company's testing lab. Brewer says that building a similar retention pond might have cost the company several hundred thousand dollars if the company had chosen to locate elsewhere. But because of a grant secured by the University of Arkansas Technology Development Foundation, The pond cost the company nothing.
The fact that we just have the access to do that, access to the parking lot, access to a forklift operator anytime we need it, a machine shop for tooling. There's things here that you just, as a startup company, couldn't do on your own. So I think it's been helpful, but we learn the most when we're out with our customer. At the end of the day, the customers helped us create these products and mold them into what we believe they want and need. But the park here has allowed us to do a lot of retooling, testing, assembly. And, you know, there's things that we're able to do here because of the space that you would never be able to do if you just, you know, had your own little space somewhere in a strip center somewhere.
Although the company has been around since 2009, this year is said to be the first year that Blue and Green will be profitable at the end of the year. But that's not to say that the company has been bleeding money. Rather, Brewer says that so far, the company has slowly been building toward planned profitability.
If you try to get profitable too quick, you may not have taken some steps that you could have to really button up your R&D. So we really chose a route of making sure that when we installed one of our systems that it worked and that it wasn't a problem. Because one of the opportunities that we've had in the marketplace is some of our competitors are having failures in their installations, and that's given us opportunity. But it's also going to be something very hard for some of these folks to overcome is an installation that doesn't work. So we pride ourselves in that all 14 of our units are working and operable, some 24/7, unattended, all automated.
That's not to say that Blue and Green's devices haven't had hiccups at some point along the development cycle. Brewer says that in the case of the high-dose system, which introduces ozone into wastewater and drinking water as a disinfectant and to address coloration issues, the apparatus didn't work. But because the company took its time in development and because the municipal water market tends to operate on a longer sales cycle of a year or more, there was time to iron out the kinks. But with commercialization comes growth to the company, growth that would involve hiring 2 to 3 more engineers, marketing staff, and financial support personnel. The company currently outsources much of its manufacturing, and it has rented some off-site warehouse space. But those two issues could be solved in future expansions at the park.
As these companies grow, manufacturing warehouse space is going to become an important part of developing a product and actually bringing it to market. And I think they're looking at it for two reasons. I think they're looking at it because it makes sense. I also think they're looking at it because we were assembling stuff in their parking lot the last couple of months. And I think they're like, okay, I think it might be good to find a place for these guys to do this. So, no, they've been very good in that regard and been very easy to work with.
Though he says the other multi-tenant buildings in the park, like the Enterprise Center, are nice buildings, Brewer likes being in the original part of the research park at the Genesis Incubator. And he says that the rent rates for space in the Genesis facility are favorable to smaller startups as well. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Daniel Hintz, Executive Director of Downtown Bentonville Incorporated. Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much, Antoinette.
The reason you're here today, you guys apparently didn't think you were busy enough during June with the Art and Culinary Festival, and you are starting a new event.
That is right.
On Thursday.
That is absolutely correct. One of the things that we've heard from several of the businesses, restaurants in the downtown areas, as well as quite a few folks who come to some of our programs like First Friday, looking for some similar elements of First Friday, the live music, the thing, but having more of an opportunity to kind of chill in downtown, walk around, check out the nooks and crannies of downtown, having that time, I guess a little bit more of an adult experience than just the straight up First Fridays. And so we came up with the concept of Around the Block, and block is spelled B-L-O-C.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, there is. Okay. Basically, it is a definition of a loose alliance of individuals and entities coming together to create something. And so we really liked that definition, which is really what it's all about. Downtown Bentonville is sort of helping wrangle folks. But it really is a hosting of different experiences and things with our restaurants, with our retailers. And then Downtown Bentonville will be bringing some live music and various artists and scattering them throughout the sort of square area to kind of keep that that movement going around. Okay. So it really is a collaboration, if you will.
So it'll be the third Thursday of the month, June through October.
That's correct. So we start in June, and it'll be the third Thursday of every month from June through October from 5 to 8 p.m. This is an experiment.
Okay.
It's funny. People ask us how many people we expect to show up. First Fridays, when we first started, I was very excited that we got 200, and now we're averaging 4,000 to 5,000 people.
Right.
So really, we're looking forward to seeing how many people jump into this. Around the block, as I mentioned, it's a collaboration of a lot of different experiences. But we're also starting this thing called the Artist Alleyway Program, which is really pods of artists, visual artists, light artists, sound artists, however it works, located in the nooks and crannies of downtown Bentonville.
Very cool.
And we want to be able to offer sort of an affordable and energetic marketplace for those local and regional artists to sell their work. And so the first couple groups of artists, Allison Short, Jason Pledger, Rex Ross, Robert Shin, Lila Hernandez, Nancy Dallison, Julie Wiley. We also have a group called Upstream Art that's going to be doing a collaborative public art piece here. Ken Davis is another one. So those are some of the visual artists. And then we also want to introduce sort of a new public art piece, if you will, on some of the private businesses in and around some of the private businesses in downtown. The public mural project that we have for this month, Artist Alley, features work created by Bentonville Middle and Junior High School students, art students.
Oh, okay.
And then each mural depicts the city of Bentonville, the students' schools, the visions of their community, and it's actually located in the alleyway between the Meridian Patisserie on South Main and the Elysian Boutique on Southeast A Street. And so really, looking at different ways for us to incorporate art, to get people moving around, bringing life back to the alleyways of our urban experience is really the point of all of that.
And there are some other special programming. I know Notes at Night, the jazz series, has been happening, and that will continue for this as well.
That's right. We have the Adams Collins Trio. And if you've heard Adams Collins before.
Been in the studio here.
Absolutely phenomenal. We love having these type of folks come into the downtown area. We're trying to incorporate more live music into both outdoor spaces as well as indoor spaces. They're going to be performing from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at the Press Room.
So indoors.
Indoors, yes. That's part of the indoor thing. But we also have live music outdoors as well. Crepes Paulette, which is a wonderful food trailer in the
Delicious.
Downtown area. Yes.
They
will be
them.
Having live music next to them. We also have the Block Street Hot Club. Which is a wonderful sort of Django Reinhardt-inspired gypsy jazz
group.
Oh, they're absolutely phenomenal. They actually go to the University of Arkansas. They're music students.
Oh.
Love to have them up. They're going to be in the alleyway next to the Norberta Philbrook Gallery, which is also going to be hosting Drew Gentle, who's a painter, sculptor, and illustrator. And his credits include illustrating for the Flintstones, Batman, Scooby-Doo, Bugs Bunny, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
There we go.
So this guy, and Family Guy.
Very Ninja Turtles, you're speaking my language.
See, there you go. Awesome. And I think the juxtaposition of someone like a Drew Gentle with the kids' murals and really bringing all this together with the music and things is really what these programs are all about. And there's a lot of other programs at the Walmart Visitors Center, the Spark Cafe. They have a giant bowl of ice cream called the Super Center. And basically, it's every flavor that they have for the Yarnell's flavors.
Of course they do.
In one giant bowl with all the toppings. And so the challenge is, if you can get a group of friends to show up and eat that whole bowl of ice cream. I don't know what the prize yet because they haven't released it, but I tell you.
But there's a prize.
I would think so.
I think I know what I'm doing Thursday because I have friends that love this kind of thing.
This is perfect. The Super Center Challenge.
Super Center Challenge.
Absolutely. And right out front, which is really cool, Farmer in the Markets, which.
Also had them in here. They're lovely.
They're absolutely phenomenal, wonderfully talented young musicians, and they're going to be performing directly out in front of the Visitor Center. So when you come out fully satiated with ice cream.
You can sit there, let it digest, and listen to some great music.
I think you'll plop there. After there is no sitting after eating that much ice cream, I don't think.
That's probably
so
the
therein lies the challenge, is not just eating, but how do you comfortably sit again after eating that much ice cream. And then another thing to do, though, is if you eat that much ice cream, right, there's an all-girls bike ride hosted by Bike Bentonville. They actually do this every Thursday of the month.
Okay.
But it leaves from the southwest corner of the square at 6:05. They have both a casual and an advanced group. You know, if I was a woman, which I'm not. But, you know, that I would be more on the casual side of things.
Sure.
I'm probably going to walk my bike half the way. But
they
do about an hour-long bike ride. They go about 13, 18 miles. It's all ages, and it's free, and it happens every Thursday. So go to the Supercenter Challenge after the all-girls
bike ride, because then you've definitely earned...
You can assuage your guilt.
Exactly.
I suppose.
Exactly.
I'm
sad to say I don't have a bike, but there are so many bike things. I feel like I'm going to have to make that purchase.
Well, both Fat Tire Bike Shop as well as the city of Bentonville does rent bikes.
Oh.
And so there's an opportunity to go and check in with them and rent a bike, and then you can participate.
Well, perfect. There
yes.
you go.
See, there you go. Now there
Problem
is no
solved.
Excuse.
No excuse.
There is no excuse. But we've been doing chef demos at the Spice and Tea Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Elysian Boutique has 10% off all merchandise. The Mustache is featuring Lauren Embry Jewelry.
Excellent.
So there's a lot of stuff going. 21C is going to have curated museum tours starting at 5. Tuscan Trotter will have culinary specials. So, you know, a lot of folks are just sort of getting together and going, what can we do on Thursday night to get people moving around downtown?
Well, it sounds like a positive thing. Well, so I think
I hope so.
Best of luck. I'm sure this will, I hope the experiment goes well.
Well, thank you very much. If people want to keep up with the experiment known as Around the Block, they can actually go to our website at downtownbentonville.org. Or if you really just want to talk to a human being, which still is
possible.
Still happens sometimes
yes,
in today's age. Yes, 479-254-0254.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
And don't forget, KUAF will present a live radio broadcast of Mozart in the Museum from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. It's Monday night at 8 on the air. I'll be hosting along with Katie Hendrickson and Peter B. Lane, the Walton Arts Center CEO and president. The event's going to feature the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. You can find out more at artisphere festival.org. Support for this live broadcast comes from Cox Communications and the Bentonville Art and Culinary Festival.
The 5th annual KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival completes its 2013 season tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. in the Stella Boyle Smith Fine Arts Concert Hall. U of A Music Department faculty and guest artists will perform Lieberman's Trio No. 1 for flute, cello, and piano, and Shostakovich's Piano Trio in E minor. Admission is free with a reception to follow. More information is available at fulbrightsummermusic.uark.edu.
If you have Alzheimer's disease or think you may have Alzheimer's disease, Health Initiatives Research is seeking participants to evaluate the effectiveness and safety of an oral study drug that may slow the progression of mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. More information available at 871-1771.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Springdale.
That's really strange because I thought I was picking the city today and I had picked Springdale.
Well, there you go. Great minds.
Or ours, at least.
Sure. Well, before we leave,
yes.
Trivia question that you've promised me.
Yes. This is for tickets to see Old Crow Medicine Show. If you know the answer, email ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
Okay.
It deals with bad Arkansas geography in one of the biggest movies of the late 70s. You're going to hear right here.
My handle's Silver Tongue Devil, and I'm here to tell you your fellow Seabeers are mighty proud of you out there. Come on.
Well, thank you, son. I appreciate it.
Tell me, you coming up on Fayetteville on Interstate 82?
Yeah, we're almost on top of it.
Well, then I got a big bad bear story for you out there. I just rolled past a county mounty roadblock down there.
You are a Silver Tongue Devil.
All right, so just tell us what movie that's from.
So they just have to know the movie.
Just have to know the movie. They said in that movie, they have Fayetteville, Arkansas on Interstate 82 in Decent County, Arkansas. So just tell us what movie.
I didn't know that we're a Decent County.
just tell us what movie got Fayetteville's location so absolutely wrong.
Okay, and email us the answer at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
Right.
We will pick winners tomorrow. I believe we have 5 pairs of tickets to give away.
We've got
quite a few.
Yeah.
So you've got lots of chances to win, so why not give it a go? And we will draw winners tomorrow.
Right.
And again, the show is at 7:30 Sunday night at the AMP.
Right, at the Washington County Fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Very much,
Looking forward to it.
Yes, I think it's going to be a good-sized crowd.
I think so.
Because we got in.
The weather's been nicer, and people
right.
were getting ready for it, and now coming back, and I think it'll be okay. It's a Sunday night, but I think it's still early enough. It'll be fine.
It's summer, so it doesn't really count as a school night. Look at it that way. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening.